Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Ironman U, RunCatalina.com, the Challenge Athlete Foundation. We've raised over $67 million to keep athletes in the game of life for sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. Our next guest, probably, I don't know, one of our favorite guys when it comes to training. His new book is Triathlon 2.0, Data-Driven Training for Performance and a Power Meter for Running. He's got all sorts of stuff going on from Formula Endurance, Mr. Jim Vance. Jimmy, how the heck are you?
I'm doing wonderful, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great. As we get closer and closer to Kona, we always love to reach out to you because you are the stat guy. And you always have. I remember a couple of years ago, you were always able to look at who went out too hard in that marathon and who was able to pace themselves the best. And you could, the people who performed the best were the ones who paced themselves in that first mile the best. So from last couple of years, what you've been looking at numbers. What have you come up with so far?
Well, ironically, Bob, as much as you say that, really the truth is I think this is the one area in the race where a lot of pros are making mistakes.
Yeah.
They are so into the moment and feel like, okay, I'm here. I'm in the top five. I'm in the top ten. It's game time. I got to go.
I'm off the bike.
Yeah, exactly. And so many of them, men and women, are making huge pacing errors in the first mile to 15K, and it's even to the point where races are being lost in that time identified. And your listeners might think, well, you know, these are some of the best in the world. How can they make that mistake? The margin of error when you come off the bike, Kona, is so small. And what I'm trying to tell our listeners is. Your listeners is that margin of error that most are doing is huge, and the athletes who minimize that margin of error are going to do very well in that race, whether they're a great runner or an average runner, because that is the spot where they can really move up, especially if they come into T2 with a really good swim bike time. You know, statistically speaking, usually, you know, the number one determinant of performance is total time to T2. But, you know, from then on, it's like, okay, that kind of separates the haves and the have-nots. But among the haves, I look at pacing, and it's an incredible thing as much as it is bike or run split. So you've got these athletes that are coming off the bike. First of all, most marathons, when athletes run a marathon, runners think about a marathon, they're running it at 7 in the morning.
Right.
When it's nice and cool and they can work into it, you know, they generally limit their warm up, this and that. They're fresh and they're able to push late. You know, you look in Kona, these athletes are starting at noon.
Right.
You know, for a marathon in the heat of a Hawaiian island, a volcano.
After you've already done 112 miles on a bike and 2.4 miles in the ocean.
Exactly. Well, with lava rock surrounding you.
Yeah.
That is soaking up the heat and the black top. Okay. Now, luckily for about the first 10 miles, there is some shade, and I use some in quotations marks, so to speak, very, very generously. It's not like they're under a huge umbrella of trees. So there's some shade early, but once they get on the Queen K, there might as well be on the moon. There's nothing there. So the pacing is really, really important early. So, and it's amazing how many athletes, you know, really, really have the chance to do well that aren't taking advantage of.
When you look at the other aspect too, when you start that run, you're running through town. You haven't seen crowds. You've been on the bike ride basically in oblivion for the last 112 miles. Now, all of a sudden, you got crowds cheering you in at the end of the bike. You're starting the run. You're running along Lee Drive where all the people are. So even if you're trying to stay in control, I'm imagining that must be tough with the crowds.
Oh, absolutely. I think people, like you said, they're so glad to be off the bike, and then they're so glad to see other people.
Yeah.
And then and now, you know, they're just kind of out, and it's nice. There's some shade, and it's not just that they see some people. I mean, the first 10 miles, they see a lot of people.
Yes.
You know, and once they go up Polanyi, hit the Queen K, they don't tend to see that many.
It's over. I remember Mark Allen talking about back in the day at the bottom of Polanyi, he's already planning his acceptance speech, and when he got to the top, he didn't know how he was going to finish. Things changed quickly. So when you look at when I look at the best runners out there, obviously we're in a car fray. And one of the guys always impresses me, Bart Arnotts, and I think he was one of the guys a couple of years ago where his splits were incredibly even. When you look at – who impresses you when you look at splits?
You know what? So on the women's side,
yeah.
Well, you know, honestly, I hadn't really prepared to see who was the best because it's so easy to see the flaws. I mean, obviously I think one of the better runners tends to be Caitlin Snow, usually.
Yeah.
But, the real thing for Caitlin is she's smart. If she could ever get her bike up there, she's definitely got the run and the intelligence to do well. But mostly, you know, Rachel Joyce is solid. She's obviously solid.
Yeah.
You know, last year her first mile was 6:31, which is still a little too fast. You know, because by the 15K mark, she was at 6:49. So she dropped off so much. She was on pace for a 2:58.54 at that point. But she was still projected to finish third at 15K. So what I do, Bob, is when I'm out there at Kona, I'm standing on a Lee Drive. And I've been doing this for a few years. It used to start where I would ride behind the athletes on a bicycle and try to get their pace based upon a Garmin, and I realized that was too variable. And then I went to actually standing at the one-mile marker and communicating with a friend who's watching the race online and giving me all the splits that they're updating. And then after a year of sitting there at the one-mile marker, I realized that on the opposite side of the road from the one-mile marker was the 15K marker.
Yes, I know.
I'm like, why am I not using the 15K marker? So I've grown this. So for the last few years, I've gotten 1 mile. But then last year, I decided, let me get 1 mile and 15K. And then let me project the race finish based upon the 15K split. The pace they're running at that point, if they were to hold that pace, what would the finish be? And believe it or not, through 15K for all the females, Miranda was going to finish fourth. She wasn't even going to make the podium.
Really?
Yes, last year.
Because she started out easy.
Yeah, and let me tell you something. No, she did not start off very easy. Her first mile was 6:02 last year, Bob. To give you an idea, I think let me check here. Keenley went out in 6:01. So she's right there.
So she's
She was actually projected through 15K. She was on pace for 6:22, which is a 2:46.48 marathon. Okay.
Yeah.
She ran 2:50.26.
Right.
Okay. But just to give you an idea, that's only like I want to say 10, 11 seconds better than she ran the year before. And yet she was 9 seconds faster through the first mile than the year before. So she really, for all that, for going out that hard, she was only 900, I think, what did she run the year before? I want to say it was 2:50.37.
Right.
So that was 11 seconds she got. So that was it. So when you look at Miranda, no, she was projected fourth. The problem is the other girls around her just didn't do as well. So Miranda's pace differential from her first mile to her actual pace was 28 seconds. Daniela Reif was 37 seconds. Rachel Joyce was 36 seconds. So it goes, you know, it just goes to show. And then the next one was 48 seconds. That was Jody Swallow. Caroline Steffen was 48 seconds as well. So the problem was she just had a better margin of error than those other girls.
So she... she didn't lose as much time.
Correct.
She maintained her pace consistently throughout the race, where the other guys. To be honest, I thought it was Rachel's race to win.
Uh-huh.
I thought that she was in the best position. If she had run her normal 302, 303, I think she wins the race.
Yeah, well, she was 13, about 12 and a half minutes in front of Miranda.
Yes, yeah.
And then her first mile was 6:31, which is a little fast.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you look, I mean, 6:31 is about, as I look here, it's on my chart, is about a 250, 251, which is what Miranda ends up running.
Right. But so, for Rachel should have been running more like a three-hour pace. Yeah,
seven minutes. If she does that, she wins. But here's the thing. At 15K, the projected winner of the race, based upon pacing through 15K, was actually Caroline Steffen.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So where did she fall off?
Well, so through, let me see here. So if we look, she was on pace. Her projected run based on 15K split was a 2:49.48. So she went out a little hot. She went out in 6:24, but she was only 6:29 by 15K. So she really, believe it or not, she had dropped off almost the least among all those girls.
For the first 15K. Yeah.
She was booking.
Right.
And then I think she hit Polani, and she was like Mark Allen.
Yeah, right.
thinking about her acceptance speech.
Looking for a ride home.
Yeah. No, she actually ran 3:08. But so let's take Caroline Steffen.
Yes.
The year, so that, you know, last year she ran 6:24 for her first mile. The year before, in 2013, her first mile was 7:02, and she runs 3:11. So 3:11.55.
Yeah.
So basically about 2.5 minute difference, but of that, you know, overall is all she lost, but she was 7:02. She, in fact, of all the women in the top 10 last year, she had the slowest run, first mile, by almost 20 seconds.
Last year.
In 2013. You know, so, and she finishes fifth. So, you know, this is, if Caroline Steffen can
run slower early, and then,
yes,
yeah,
she'll exhibit some patience. I mean, I think she can really break through. She's definitely there. She's got the swim. She's got the bike. She's proven her toughness. She's right there. But it's interesting to me how actually I think I might have had my sheet there wrong. Did she finish that place? I can't even remember now. I have them here based upon rank, not upon finish place.
Gotcha.
So I think she was second that year, wasn't she?
Yes, she did finish second twice.
Yes.
And not sure which one. But anyways, what's interesting to me is that with all the sophisticated power meters and everything else people are using, that they wouldn't have a sense of, okay, that first mile I want to be 7 or I want to be 6:40, rather than, you know, if you burn those matches now, you're done later.
Well, and that's why my dark horse pick to win Kona this year on the men's side is Frederik van Leerde, or Leerde, however you say it.
No, you're right. Van Leerde. Then why is that?
Because when you look at his pacing ability, I mean, that guy is so good. He, you know, I've seen his power files. They're on the bike. They're excellent. He's very steady. He understands how to conserve energy in the craziest times of the race. He doesn't blow up. He's never ridiculous off the bike in his running. You know, last year, believe it or not, so he finished, let me see here as I try to look at this. So last year he finished, eighth. Is he eighth? Yeah. No, he was eighth last year.
Yeah.
He went out, though. His first mile split was 6:13.
Okay.
So not ridiculous by any stretch of the imagination. By 15K, he was at 6:26. If you look at his drop-off in the first 15K compared to the rest of the athletes, it, it's it's one of the best. I mean, that's only a 13-second differential over 9 miles.
Wow.
That was very solid. And, in fact, he was projected to finish third at that point, and he unfortunately just kind of lost it. I don't know what went wrong on that day. I just think it was kind of a bad day for him. He seems to, you know, the fact that he was, you know, 6:13 is not crazy.
Not at all.
Compared to the rest of those guys, you know, being at the pace he was on pace at 15K for a 2:45, which is right about what we would expect.
Exactly. Yeah, to win the race, yeah.
You know, just to give you an idea, Kinglay was on pace for a 2:41.59, so right at 2:42 for at 15K. So he was right there. Unfortunately, didn't quite have the you know, the second half of the marathon for some reason. So you know, you take a guy who's won the race. He's been very solid all around. I mean, every time I see, you know, this year he won Ironman South Africa.
Yep.
I think he was fifth at Frankfurt. You know, the only question is he, has he raced too much?
Well, it's, you know, interesting, too, if you look, I think he outsplit Jan in the half at, you know, at the Worlds, in the run. Mm-hmm. I think he's really working. He knows he's got with the Jan Frodeno out there. Sebastian has to run better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, it's interesting just how guys, though, are, you know, the guys' race is as much about ego, it seems, as anything else. But, you know, and I'll tell you what, too, lately in the men's race, with all these new guys that have come in,
yep,
and we see these new names in the tops, you know, Kinglay, Hoffman, Frodeno, Potts, you know, and not that Potts is a new name, but him being, just missing the podium is huge.
It is huge.
You know, fourth. You know, we got Cyril Vinaut, we got Nils Fromhold, we got Tim Van Berkel. You know, we still have Bart Arnaults, who, yep, we know is a great runner. We got, you know, and then,
yeah,
you go back to the names the year before. We had McKenzie suddenly up there. We had Kunama. We had Tim O'Donnell. You know, it's like even Rana. So you've got all these big names that are up there near, you know, racing well. So I think there's this unknown. There's this fear of the unknown when they come off the bike because the men's field is just so diverse.
Well, and the thing is, if you look at, besides Sebastian winning by, 3 to 5 minutes, whatever he won by, if you look second through about 12th, I think there's a minute or less in between each of those athletes. I mean, so there was a lot of racing going on in the back half of that marathon where people are going from 12th to 8th or 8th to 4th or 4th to 8th. There's a lot more, you know, a lot more of that going on than people realize when they say, oh, he finished 8th. Well, he finished 8th, but he was, you know, 3 minutes out of 3rd.
Yeah.
Right?
From 2nd to 10th was less than 11 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So you're talking a minute a place.
Exactly.
I mean,
so,
it's not as close as last weekend's race with Matt Chabot.
No, with a sprint finish. But on the women's side, if you look at Marina, was over 14 minutes down off the bike, but she was still already in the top 10. You know, mm-hmm. if you're 14 minutes back off the bike for the guys, I think you're back, you know, you might be, what, in the 20s or something.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I look at Glenn Jorgensen.
Yes.
I was speaking with Bobby McGee, and he was telling me about how her pacing, when she was just coming onto the ITU circuit, she was so far back off the bike,
right,
that she just went right into her pace, and she would run her way up the field.
Right.
And she would do great. And then suddenly, as her swim got better and better and better, and she suddenly was coming off the bike with the Emma Moffitts and the, you know, those types, suddenly she was running ridiculously crazy first Ks, you know, that would totally negate her run. And so one of the things they were really working on her with was, hey, don't change what's been working. You've been running great. You don't need to run what they run. Run what you know.
Exactly.
And now she's pretty much the best, you know, runner in the world.
Well, not only that, like you look at Chicago, she was, you know, off the bike with the lead group, where in the past, at last year's World Championship, she had a run back from, what, ninth place or something and run her way through. So now, when you get off the bike first, as Brownlee and Gomez know, and you're the best runner, it's sort of game, set, match.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
What is your analysis on Jan Frodeno from last year? Now, and last year he had a penalty, he had a flat, he ran out of transition on T2 and realized he was wearing the wrong clothes, had to run back in and change. So he basically made every rookie mistake he could. But when you look what he did at the 70.3 Worlds, and you look what he did at Frankfurt with what he ride, 404 or whatever heck he rode, and then he still ran 247, that guy seems to be in a different league.
Yeah, you know, he ran, his first mile was aggressive last year in Kona, and I think he learned a lot. Now, some of that, I think, was because he had a penalty.
Right.
I believe he had to serve the penalty in T2.
Yeah, probably.
So he probably comes out of T2 with some fresh legs, feeling like, okay, I've been standing around for a bit. I've got, you know, I'm okay. He went out in 5:55. Believe it or not, he's, and this is, at 15K, he was on 6:11 pace, but that's exactly what Keenlay was on. So Keenlay was on 6:11 pace through 15K.
Yeah.
So he was not going to catch Keenlay at that point. He was not projected. In fact, Frodeno was projected to finish fifth. But, you know, Potts actually through 15K was projected to finish second.
Mm.
So it's, you know, he was able to kind of move up. I've been impressed with his strength. I think he's made the transition pretty well. I'm sure last year was a huge learning experience for him. So, I just can't imagine that, I think he's following a similar trajectory to Keenlay. You know, Keenlay, I believe in 2013 showed up and, you know, was one of those guys near the front. Am I correct? No, I'm not correct on that because it was McKenzie and, Starkiewicz. But I thought he was in there. I thought he was like third in there. I think he was third off the bike.
Yep,
he was. So I think he's learned. He's kind of, and I, you know, he needed that. He needed that. Okay, I got to push the bike. I got to suffer on the run. I got to figure it out. And I see that Frodeno's kind of following that.
Exactly. What's interesting to me, too, is that we, for a lot of years, when Craig Alexander was winning, we looked at, okay, being big isn't necessarily a positive in Kona.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at an Andy Potts, that's a big guy. Jan Frodeno, that's a big guy. You sort of need to be strong because of the winds out there. But you know, it seems that would be a negative in the heat, but it doesn't seem to be.
Well, I think some of these guys train in the heat pretty well. Like I know Van Leer is training right now in Arizona.
Right.
And it's like monsoon season there. So he's, you know, and Van Leer is not a small guy either.
No, right, yeah.
So, you know, when you really look at it, even Ben Hoffman wasn't a small guy.
No.
You know, so, you know, I think it's the big guys are able to push the watts. You know, they're able to be good swimmers. They push the watts on the bike, and they've got long, long strides. So it's, you know, that's really tough to beat. Yes, the heat can get them, and that's and I think that just goes back to pacing again. How smart can they be when they come off the bike? Are they confident in executing their plan? Because that's really where we're at right now with the race on both sides, the men's and the women's race. Execution off the bike in the early stages, patience. You know, if they can conserve the energy on the bike to come off the bike and run with these guys, because if someone's a better runner than you by, let's say, 3 to 5 minutes, but they don't run very intelligently in those first few miles, they've now negated that advantage of running that they have over you if you're smarter.
So,
now, if you try to run their race, well, now the consequences of that are even greater to you than them because since they're the better runner. So, you know, that's really what we're going to be looking for in Kona, see, okay, who really executes off the bike in that first mile to 15K.
Who do you see making a big jump? You get someone like a Ben Hoffman, I think 1 year goes from 15th to 2nd. And we've seen that a lot. Guys go from, you know, the 9th place to 2nd. Or from looking at your run splits, do you get a sense of who might be primed to have a big breakthrough year?
You know, that's always hard to tell.
Yeah.
I told people all the time, when I was preparing, when I was racing on as an elite Ironman on the circuit, that you always you take this the favorites in the field, cut them in half. Half of them aren't ready. They're not prepared. Something's going to go wrong. They're going to have mechanicals. They're going to be sick. They've had an injury that's bothering them, whatever. The other half, okay, what core of those guys have shown that they can execute? That they really, like, they're not going to take major risks. Like, they'll always just be in the race, and they'll stick around, and they'll be smart, you know, and they'll come off the bike and have a decent shot. Those are the guys in that half of the field you want to look at. And then you always have to consider there's somebody ready to jump through. There's always somebody, at least one athlete, that's ready for a big breakthrough race that no one's thinking about
right.
or even concerned about. You know, I was pretty lucky. One time that was me.
Exactly.
You know?
Florida, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, a few years ago it was Luke McKenzie, you know.
And then last year was Ben Hoffman.
There was Ben Hoffman, absolutely. Yeah. And even Potts, I think you'd say. I mean,
yeah.
Vinot, if that's how you say his name. I don't think anybody really had Fromhold on their.
Yeah, Nils certainly can do it.
Yeah, so you know, you'd almost have to go and examine every guy's training log for the past few months here, leading into it, and then even then, some guys will get sick in the week showing up and. You know, or even just get their taper wrong. You know, maybe they pushed a little too hard in a few workouts, getting near their peak, that they're just not going to, you know, they're not going to time their peak just right. And, you know, that's what makes this sport exciting, I think. So, you know, I honestly look at Van Leerde.
Yes.
You know, and people may think that, you know, he's not a new breakthrough guy. Well, I mean, last year he was what, ninth, I think, you know, eighth.
But he's a guy who's won it before. You can never count on someone who's won it before, because all it takes is you have a couple of bad miles because of your belly or whatever. You know, all of a sudden, you know, like we talked about, there's only a few minutes separating first from there. And he was right with Ben. He and Ben Hoffman were going back and forth when they were running down Elite E-Drive.
Mm-hmm.
So he was right up there.
He is. So I think – I look at him. I mean, he went 808 in Frankfurt.
Yep.
You know, I think he's probably the guy people are overlooking. You know, because he got fifth in that race. Nobody's really like, he's fifth in Frankfurt. He you know, Frodeno's the king.
Right.
You know, Frodeno is clearly the favorite. He should be. He's, you know, he has the resume. Olympic champion. You know, Frankfurt champion. Tons of other. Things on his resume. He's definitely one of the favorites. Keenle, you know, he's also shown that he's got tons of improvement without the penalty, you know, and other things. So, you know, he's learned. He's ready to come back. He's following that Keenle trajectory. And Keenle, of course, is certainly a contender, podium contender at the very least, you'd have to say, with his skill set. You know, but I there's something about Frederick that
that's cool.
Really, I like.
Now, do you think Danielle Arif comes out her first time? She leads till, what, about mile 23, 22, wherever that happened to be. Had a great race after winning 70.3 Worlds. So went into Kona really prepared for 70.3 and had not really done the long miles for Kona. And had, obviously, a great day. If Miranda doesn't have the run she has, she's a champion. What was your read on Danielle Arif after watching her race for the first time?
Well, one thing we know about Danielle is Miranda's going to have to chase her all race.
Right.
From the gun, she's going to put Miranda on the defense.
Right.
You know, she had a 14 and a half minute lead.
Yep.
Off the bike last year. She was, she was actually the first one to T2 or to mile one rather. And a T2. Her first mile split was 6:31. But by the time she hit 15K, she was on pace for just a shade under 7 minutes. 6:51. So, you know, that's right. That's just a shade under 7 minute pace. So, at 2:59. But she ends up at 3:07.
Yeah.
You know, if she's smart, I mean, just think, if she, if at, at 2:59, though, literally, through, with a 2:59, which sounds like a great marathon, you know, instead, she's still projected to finish second. But she was projected second to Caroline Steffen.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So she was still projected to, she was projected to be an 8:55-45 finish, which would have beaten Marina by a minute and a half at, through 15K for both of them. And she just wasn't able to hold the pace after 15K. So relative to Marinda, which, I mean, let's face it. I mean, Marinda is the best women's runner there is.
I
mean,
no question.
Hands down.
Yeah.
So stop trying to run her race. Be smarter. That's what I would tell Danielle Urey. Like, run your race. Run your pace. You're already going to have a probably 10 to 15-minute lead on Marinda. That means she's got to run 30 seconds per mile on average. So if you run
three hours even, yep.
She's got to run 2:47,
yeah.
Which she has never done.
Nobody has ever done.
Yes, yes, exactly. So
yeah.
So it's like she doesn't, and that's the thing. If someone can get her to understand that in the moment, if she can get herself to have confidence in her preparation, I mean, do I think she'll have 13 minutes on Marinda at off the bike? I do.
Yeah.
No, I think yeah. she will. Now, it just comes down to how smart does she run early. If she runs like she has in the past, 30 seconds too fast than what she needs, she will hand the race back to Marinda because Marinda is just a warrior.
Yeah. Well, and she knows what she needs to do. And she's always behind off the bike. So it's not like it's a surprise, and she's not going to panic and try to get too much too early.
Absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
One person that people are not talking about is our 2012 champion, Leanne DeCave, who has, I think, is rededicated and seems like she really, you know, she really is looking for a great race again. What were your thoughts on Leanne?
Well, I don't have any data from her from 2014. However, when I looked at 2013, she was, let me see here, Dave, she ran, her first mile off the bike was 6:47. You know, unfortunately, I don't think I got her splits the year she won.
Mm.
I was still kind of starting to get into this and things. So, but she was on pace projected for a 2:57, but unfortunately she ran 3:27.
Wow, yeah.
So, excuse me, Leanna's just got to get back to being Leanna.
Right.
You know, she's just got to have confidence in herself coming off the bike and knowing, like, I've been a world champion here. I know what I'm doing. She shouldn't feel that she has to chase anyone. You know, she's another one that's going to put Carfrae, you know, on the defensive early. She's going to be right there with whoever off the, out of the water, you know, and she can set her tempo and go from there. So I think she's got a good chance.
It was interesting. The year she won, I think we were all watching as Marinda moved in on her to pass her, and we're all like, okay, Marinda's going to go right through the field here and win again. And all of a sudden,
She found a gear
and not only moved away from Marinda, then she went out and caught Caroline Steffen and won the race.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of the more impressive performances I've seen, because it's not often that Marinda moves in to catch somebody and doesn't and actually gets bumped back. So that was a very impressive performance, and I'm hoping that we can see that again, because you start talking about Caroline Steffen, Marinda Carfrae, and all the other gals that are all could be in there. It could be a pretty amazing finish down the line with Daniela Reif. And there's a number of who can win.
And here's the thing, Marinda is being given splits.
Right.
She's being told, okay, you're 15 minutes down.
Right.
You know, you're 13 minutes down. You're 12 minutes down. You know. So she's getting that. People at the front aren't getting that. But at the same time, if you're someone that's at the front, you can use that to your advantage, because Marinda has shown her biggest weakness coming off the bike is she's too aggressive too early. She's on pace for 2:46. The year before in 2013, she was on pace for 2:42.
Hmm.
You know, it's like through the first 5K. It's like Marinda is going out too fast. And the bigger the split somebody puts on her through through T2 and into mile one, you know, when she's given splits at that point, the more aggressive she gets.
Yeah.
And the more aggressive she gets,
the chance you can blow up.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
So you want to put pressure on Marinda?
Put a big lead on her. Get a big lead.
Get a big lead on her out of T2.
Love it.
And then be smart. And the athletes who execute that are the ones that are going to do well. That's really where it's at. And also, just some interesting things, just a little tidbit I'll throw to you. Last year, I actually started collecting cadence data.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Looking at run cadence. Who, you know, as they come through, I'm actually using a watch and looking at steps and getting, revolutions per minute or stride rate as they run. So here's a little question for you, Bob.
Yes.
Who tends to have the higher cadence, men or women?
I would say the women.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very much. Very much.
I think Marinda's cadence is faster than pretty much most of the guys.
Actually, yeah. Believe it or not, last year at mile one, her cadence was 94. By 15K, it had only dropped to 92.
Wow.
You know, in comparison, Daniela Reif at mile one was 85, and then at 15K was 83.
That's still pretty consistent.
That's pretty consistent, yep. But, and my hope is to collect a little more data over the next few years and start looking and seeing can we project a drop in, you know, in a certain amount of drop or based upon cadence change to the first 15K. But, it's fun stuff to kind of look and project a race at 15K. So something I hope to do for you in Kona as well.
I love it. So Triathlon 2.0, talk a little bit about your latest book. When will that come out?
It's going to be late winter, early spring. So probably say February.
Okay.
It's published by Human Kinetics, and it is a book for long course triathletes who use a power meter and some sort of GPS system, wristwatch, and saying, okay, you've got all this data. Now what? You don't want to buy a training plan, some generic training plan. You want to use this data for yourself. So, well, how you use the data depends on your age, your gender, and your goals. So, do you just want to finish an Ironman? Do you want to just do better in your age group? Do you want to make 70.3 worlds? Do you want to make Kona? Do you want to place in your age group in Kona? Do you want to win Kona? So, it's basically saying, okay, well, during the different times of year, here are the metrics to pay attention to. Aerobic fitness measuring metrics versus, race specific metrics and things like that. Things that a lot of things you find in Training Peaks, performance management chart, that's real popular among athletes with data, something called chronic training load or CTL. What's a good CTL goal to reach? So it really takes the numbers and says, okay, here's this, and even says, what's the right ramp rate of training? If I'm really gonna be aggressive in my training, what's aggressive? Well, give me some numbers that tell me whether I'm high risk, moderate risk, or low risk. And so I've done all that and tapering and down to the number. So it's really the self-coached athlete or even a coach who says, I want to learn to use this data better with my athletes. How can I use it? I think it's a great book. I know Human Kinetics is very excited about it, and it really puts the power of data into the user's hands. So.
Love it. And then you're also working on the whole concept of a power meter for running, which is something that people hadn't even really been talking about. But that's something that would be coming out when, that book?
Around the same time, believe it or not.
Oh, my God, you're a busy guy.
I am. But luckily, the other one's, the first one's pretty much done. It's, we're working on layout. The other one I'm still writing, the power meters for running, I'm writing. In fact, in Kona, anybody who's going to be going going to Kona, there's a lot, the two power meter companies are Stride and RPM Squared.
Yep.
And they'll both be in Kona. They both, I think, have events going on or are in the Ironman Expo, so the athletes can go check it out. One is more of a sensor that uses kind of kinetic energy. Mm-hmm. It's the most general way to say it. The other one actually measures from an insole in your shoe. So two entirely different types. Really cool information to be gained from all of them. And, yeah, it's, you know, the cool thing about running with power compared to cycling. You know, in cycling, we're just, what's the watts? The bigger watts, the better.
Right.
In running, that's not really the case.
It's just the opposite. So, you want to use less effort, right?
Well, or, yeah, I mean, yeah, in a lot of ways. We care now more about power relative to pace. You know, in cycling, we don't really care about speed because speed is so variable based upon winds, and drafts, you know, surface, uphill, downhill, flat, all that. You know, in running, we don't have that much variance in terms of pace. So the ability, you know, to really correlate that with pace and even heart rate is huge now. So, and that's what the book's gonna be on, you know, basically explaining to the running community. Because I think power meters are going to take off in the running community, much like it has in the cycling and triathlon.
It's interesting because those guys are, we see the triathlon folks as early adapters with all sorts of products, everything from aero helmets to aero bars to clip-in pedals to Garmin to Polar, all that. Where a lot of times your single sport people aren't quite as open to new products, but I think the runners, once they realize how cool this is, are going to be all over this.
Yeah, well, you know what? And honestly, it's such new technology. People are asking me questions, and I'm like, I'm not comfortable answering that yet.
Wow!
Like, give me a few weeks here, and let me continue using it. Study with those who have it. So by the time I get to Kona, I'll probably even have more info to kind of share on it.
Love it. And you'll be with us next week on our Breakfast with Bob show. I think, what were we talking about? Wednesday?
Or Friday.
Friday 11.
Mm-hmm.
Friday 11. You moved your stuff around so you can come join us Friday 11. I love it. Jim Vance will be with us next Friday. And we'll be chatting a bunch about power and everything else. And at that point, Jim will, the day before the race, will know exactly who's going to win and what their time will be. That'll be great. We are going to be brought to you by Ironman U, RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $67 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or subscribe at iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.